This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, Sharp Money, week three concludes tonight. You start Philly at Tampa right now. Philly's laying 5.5 on the road, the total 44. And then an hour later, 8:15 East Coast, 5:15 on the West. The Rams are at Cincinnati. The big question of the evening, will he or won't he, Joe Burrow? Seems to be some optimism that he will play. That number was 2.5 earlier today, has jumped to 3. So everybody's sitting with Tampa laying 3, hosting the Rams as, again, Monday Night Football with a doubleheader concludes week 3 in the NFL and the weekend that was. Speaking of which, we're running through our likes, our loves, and our loathes for week 3. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher, and I'm going to get to my loathe right now. And a friendly bet with our buddy Mike Somich. Congratulations to Somich. He was on the Bills. The Bills end up closing, let's see, they ended up closing 4.5 for the Bills at Washington. And my loathe are the Commanders because I had some expectations. 5 turnovers and a 37-3 beatdown by the Bills in D.C., a sellout crowd, new ownership, didn't matter. Howell was terrible in the game. I got to take a hit from that for that as well. 19 of 29, 170 yards, 4 interceptions. You can't do much when you're constantly under duress. He was sacked 9 times. He was hit, Howell, 15 times. It might be the worst offensive line in football, that being the Commanders, and it showed. That was a 60-minute ass-whooping by the Bills over the Commanders. And it was a defense. It's a very good Commanders defense, though they've been killed on the run. It's a defense that played pretty well in the first half, but then you could just tell they were dispirited and lost their edge in the second half as the offense couldn't do anything against the Bills. And as an aside, Josh Allen was freaking awesome. There are certain things he can do when he rolls out on the run, throwing against his body, picking up first downs and crucial third down spots that others can't do. I thought Allen was very good in the game. 46 rush yards, 218, 2 total touchdowns. My loathe this week, boys, the Washington Commanders.
Got no qualms with that. Sam Howell, 4 interceptions. This team accumulates only 230 total yards in this game. And, you know, the defense actually didn't play that poorly when you look at they give up 37 points. And how about one other factor in this game? They obviously had the pick six as well. But, you know, how about them kicking a field goal with 50 seconds remaining on a 51-yard field goal? Are we that concerned about not getting shut out? Is that the goal here?
Yeah, I guess so. Patrick, you mentioned the O-line. The Commanders have allowed 19 sacks through 3 games. That's wow. Tied for the most of any team over that span of 3 games since the Texans in 05. And it's the 5th most since sacks became an official stat in 1982. So, yeah, Sam Howell's certainly under a lot of pressure right now. And it'd be really tough for us to grade him and judge him based on what he's dealing with his offensive line right now. But the Commanders are a bit of a fraudulent team at 2-1 right now. I think everyone kind of expects them to fall back some. And on the other side for the Bills, you think Stephon Diggs is happy? Over 100 yards, 8 balls thrown his way, 111 yards total for him. I think Stephon Diggs was happy getting the ball that much yesterday.
And just taking a peek, boys, it doesn't get easier for the Commanders. Now, this is a game that randomly they win. I think it was on a Monday night last year, and the Commanders beat Philly. And like the perfect, remember, they ran the ball very well against the Eagles. But Washington travels 1 o'clock window to Philly next Sunday. And right now, Philly's laying 7 points in that matchup. So doesn't get any easier for my loathe of the week, and that is the Commanders. Amal Shaw, you're up.
Yeah, I've got a team in the NFL as well. It's the New York Jets. I mean, this is just an utter disgrace of a football team. Defensively, they're still an elite football team. They give up 13 points. The Patriots wind up with 15 thanks to Zach Wilson getting sacked on a safety. But his inability to spot receivers. And then Robert Saleh in his 3rd year, this is his 37th NFL regular season game. He's coached as the head coach, guys. This is a guy that was 4-13, 7-10, and 1-2 so far. Has not been overly impressive. But here's the stat that really stood out to me, guys. Just a quick question. It's a random question. They've played 37 games during Saleh's tenure. Any guess at how many times the Jets have scored 21 points or more in a football game?
37 games?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. 10 times?
12. Close. And I'll tell you what, it's not good. In this NFL where it's designed for offense, think about this. The Dolphins yesterday put up a number that it would take the Jets the equivalent of four games almost to be able to get to in Robert Saleh's tenure. At this point, this program right now is in just shambles. You saw Carter and Wilson getting into it on the sideline with Zach Wilson a little bit. You mentioned, I don't know if it was you or Dustin mentioned earlier, Nathaniel Hackett. He hasn't been able to improve this team. Joe Douglas, the GM, I get you guys wanted to build around Aaron Rodgers, but we know what Zach Wilson is. How bad is Tim Boyle as a backup? You can't find anybody. Let Mike White walk away. I mean, there is not a guy out there on the street. I'm telling you right now, Tim Jenkins, a quarterback coach who comes on our show every week, played at Western Colorado. Give Tim Jenkins a call. Come on, man. At this point in time, give me somebody that's going to throw the ball more than 1 yard on fourth down and 10. Patrick, I can't take it. I don't even understand. This is the bigger question I have after watching that Jets game yesterday. What the hell are you doing with your life on a Sunday if you're attending a Jets game?
It was depressing. Weather was disgusting. And again, Zach Wilson had an opportunity to win it. That's the crazy part, because that defense. But they were just, it's about as ugly as it gets, because you do, like you mentioned, big guy, the defense is tremendous. The quarterback play is about as bad as it gets.
Yeah, and I look, in fairness to Zach Wilson, really not that much changed for him from last year to this year, other than about 4 to 6 weeks in camp when he was the backup to Aaron Rodgers. I don't know how much he could absorb from one of the greatest to do it of all time in that time to then take that next step, but it's not there. It's definitely not there. And at this moment, Robert Saleh was asked about Zach Wilson and him being the starter. Here's what he had to say yesterday.
Yeah, he's fine.
At what point do you just decide maybe, you don't want to let the season get away from you? So do you continue to go, if it continues to go in this bad direction?
We're still early in the season. We knew that even with Aaron at quarterback, we knew that there was going to be some hiccups along the way because of the new offense, new play caller, new O-line, new players all over the offense side of the ball, and now you've got this curveball that was sent to us, and so there's they're acclimating, and they're going to get better, and but it's still very early in the season.
Is he drunk?
Hold on, let me give you one more soundbite from Saleh yesterday about sticking with Zach Wilson. That's what he was asked. This was his response, and you can respond after.
Right now, Zach is the best player he's who gives us the best chance to win. Ooh. And, so that's basically that would be the cleanest answer I could give you.
Well, he's being diplomatic, but you can tell he wants to take that lantern that he's standing behind and flip it upside down and freak the F out. I mean, he sounds like a dude that has to wait, and then give an answer that he thinks he's supposed to give, right? There's nothing. What could he possibly say?
He should have come into that press conference and said, look, Tim Boyle's not good, and Zach Wilson sucks. Guys, we have no other alternative at this point in time. If you know anybody, some former high school quarterbacks, some guys who played collegiately, they're under the age of 35, they look like they might have a pulse. Can we get them in here? Patrick, I watched that entire game yesterday, and I have never, ever in my entire life seen a more awful performance out of a quarterback. And the best part was on CBS, they were showing crowd shots. You mentioned the weather yesterday in New York or in Jersey at the Meadowlands. The fans, you have to give them credit for their loyalty to this football team. But my God, I was sitting there watching that game thinking, people came in from Long Island, from the city, from Westchester, other parts of Jersey. How the hell could you give up 5 to 6 hours of a Sunday to watch that big bag of dirt? I mean, it was unbelievable how pathetic the Jets were yesterday. To me, if I were the Jets fans, I would literally be going back and say, listen, I don't care if you're not going to refund my money. We are not attending another game as long as Zach Wilson is quarterback. There should be a fan walkout on this team right now.
I'm just taking a look at the stats, because how many total yards did the Jets have? The Jets had 171 total yards, but they had an 87-yard touchdown drive in the fourth.
Yeah.
So 171 minus. So essentially, they were 90. Under 100 total yards on offense for the game until the fourth quarter in that drive.
Yeah, they have three options in my mind. Number one is trade for Kirk Cousins. It makes a lot of sense based on the Vikings' start to the year. He could fit right in and be what they need. Certainly a massive upgrade. They can trade for Josh Dobbs, too. The other option is a little unconventional because this guy's out there. He doesn't have a job at the moment. He's not a quarterback. What he is a genius at game planning, a unique offense. Paul Johnson would be the third option behind those three and just run the triple option in New York with that defense and win games 10-3. That's the only way the Jets are doing anything with Zach Wilson right now.
Just to Patrick's point on the yards, I want to add one more thing real quick. These are the Jets' first five drives. Three plays, negative 5 yards. Six plays, 5 yards. Three plays, 6 yards. Three plays, negative 12 yards. Three plays, 7 yards.
Not great.
Imagine like Dalvin Cook and Lazard and all these guys who thought they were going there to ring chase, and now they're stuck with this situation.
You know what Sunday Night Football is this week?
Jets and
Kansas
Chiefs.
Kansas City Chiefs. Ooh. At the Jets.
We've got a Hall of Famer against a guy who's going to be unloading trucks in Transylvania pretty soon.
Number right now, 9 over at DraftKings with the Chiefs laying it on the road. Things have fallen apart. And you mentioned... Did anybody have any word as far as what was happening with Carter and the fights on the sideline?
I think they were just frustrated. Zach Wilson was not hitting guys. If you watch a drive in the fourth quarter, Garrett Wilson on a crossing route is wide open. There's nobody within 5 yards of him. Zach waits to throw to him until the defender's near him, and then it's an incomplete pass.
Not even going to do the research on it. I'm just telling you right now, an official play, VSiN.com/picks. Chiefs -6.5 first half against the Jets Sunday Night Football. Bet it now before it moves to over a touchdown.
Hey, there it is. So that's a good loathe. Mine was a little random with the Commanders, but the Jets is a hearty, very good loathe. When we return, the big guy has his loathe, and then we're going to go out to Cincinnati. Mike Petralia, he's on the beat for the Bengals. Will Burrow play tonight? We'll find out.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, if you're looking to become a better bettor, and tens of thousands of people have already turned on to Juice Reel, you should too. That's Juice Reel, R-E-E-L, in the App Store. Juice Reel is not a sports book. It's a tool to help you beat the books. Juice Reel connects all of your sports betting accounts into one app, loads all of your betting history, and gives you analytical edges. Backed by nearly $1 billion in bets from sports bettors in all 50 states. Use the data to follow the winners and fade the losers. Don't place another bet until you've downloaded this revolutionary sports betting tool. It's Juice Reel. That's juice, like orange juice, Reel, R-E-E-L. It's absolutely free to download right now. Juice Reel, your iPhone or Android device. Make sure you check it out right now. Juice Reel, become a better bettor. We got you back. It is Sharp Money. I'm Patrick Maher, of course. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, downtown Fremont Street at the D. Like, love, loathes. We're smack dab towards the end here. I was going to say the middle, but we've got through the likes. I like the upsets across the NFL. Jalen Milroe for Amal Shaw. Josh Dobbs for the big guy. Our loves, the Dolphins. That offensive explosion. C.J. Stroud, eyeball test. Great Travis Kelce. Who doesn't love love? Loathe, mine's the Commanders. Ron Rivera does it again. Big spot, terrible performance. Loathe for Amal Shaw, the Jets. And we get to the big guys. Loathe, go ahead.
Yeah, I just think this guy's really annoying. He gets a lot of praise from a lot of people. And he even had a movie made about him where it seemed as though he was a good guy. But really, like, really scummy things happened that led to the movie being made. I'm, of course, talking about Sean Payton. Sean Payton, and I wouldn't take shots at Sean Payton had, you know, he not handled things differently, because he blamed Nathaniel Hackett for a lot of things that went on last year with Denver, and he was going to come in and fix things right away. And I think everyone knew from the outside it was going to be a longer-term fix than just one offseason with Russell Wilson. But the fact that he called out Hackett and the poor coaching wants me to now call out Sean Payton, because what happened yesterday was historic. They lose to the Dolphins, allowing the second most yards in NFL history, only behind 1951's Rams versus Yanks matchup, which the Rams had 735 yards and the Yanks became a baseball team eventually. So Miami on Denver goes for 70 points, 726 total yards, 10 touchdowns, 376 through the air, 350 on the ground, and zero turnovers. You can't blame Nathaniel Hackett for that. He's got his own issues with the Jets right now. But Sean Payton, this is all you, brother. all you and all the hype around everyone talking about Sean Payton's an offensive guru and he's a genius and he's a leader. Amal and I talked on the phone about this last night. Was it Sean Payton in New Orleans? Or maybe it was Drew Brees, who was really good his last couple years with the Chargers before finding his way down in New Orleans with the Saints. I just have some questions, and Sean Payton is already getting a little frustrated. Here's how it sounded when he met with the media following the game, and they asked him about this epic loss.
I'm at a loss for words because I've never been in I've been on the other side of some games like that, and then every once in a while in this league, you get your butt whipped, but this was more than that.
You said it's embarrassing, but this is kind of an historic game.
I mean, I'm aware.
Third time the team has scored 70 points over 70.
What's the question?
How do you feel about it?
I just finished telling you.
Historically.
Looking kind of old, feeling kind of old, and I think the shtick with Sean Payton's a little old. I don't know if he's the guy everyone pretends he is.
I'm going to give you guys a comparison. You know who he is, just a little bit more boisterous, and the other guy's very nice and comes across very classy? He's Tony Dungy. He won one Super Bowl. He won 10 to 12, 13 games every year in Indianapolis, just like Sean Payton did in New Orleans. But at the end of the day, when the chips are all in, they could never win it outside of those 1 years where they got to play the Bears in a rainstorm game, and Rex Grossman was the quarterback on the other side. And you look at this team, they beat the Colts on the onside kick. Tracy Rocker had a big play. I mean, I'm not saying they're not good coaches, but, man, we talk about these guys like they're Bill Walsh, Bill Belichick, and other coaches.
They're 0-3. And, by the way, during that presser that you just played, that clip, notice how he started off passive-aggressively. He said, I've been on the other side of this before.
Letting you know.
Dude, no, you haven't. You've literally never been on the side where you beat somebody 70-20.
Was he playing for the Yanks? Stop right there.
Yeah, it's impossible for you to be on the other side. We understand what you're doing. You're coming in with your equity. That's why he came into this Broncos job, clowning everybody in the regime, as you mentioned, big guy, previously, Hackett and the rest, because he feels like he can point to the ring and say, I have equity. Well, they're 0-3, sinking ship. The defense stinks. And frankly, if they get behind, the offense is not necessarily high power, so there's nothing right now to like about the Broncos. Obviously, they're 0-3.
And they better get a win at Chicago or against the Jets, which those are kind of coin flip games, because after that in their schedule, they go to Kansas City, they host Green Bay, then they face Kansas City again off their bye. They're at Buffalo. It could get ugly fast. Just ask Garrett Bowles. Who's Garrett Bowles? Offensive lineman. At his locker, just absolutely distraught over this loss again. Last night, he said that this is the same thing over and over again.
It's tired of losing, man. I've been here for 7 years, and all I've done is loss, and it's frustrating. But at the same time, I know the dogs we have in our room. I know the dogs we have up front. I know the people we have in this facility, this organization, and we have winners, and we do. We got to figure it out. We got to figure it out the hard way. But sometimes, you know, when you hit rock bottom, you know, you can't keep going down. You got to go up.
I don't know, man. Totally. If you go far enough down in the earth, I think you pop out in China, right? Isn't that how it works? You go through the other side, through the crust. Next thing you know, you're popping up the other side. I think he's trying to pop up in China.
I wish he said, I don't know, man. Hey, at least we get paid.
At least it's payday.
Can't wait for Tuesday.
I wish he said, we went from Nathaniel Hackett to a dude that was played by Kevin James in a movie. What do you expect? Wasn't that who played Sean Payton in that movie?
Yeah, and his whole, dude, how have we not brought this up yet? His whole shtick of the juicy fruit and only chewing juicy fruit. He's kind of a bag. If we're just going to be honest. Sean Payton's kind of a bag.
I didn't even understand why ripped Nathaniel Hackett, right? I mean, he got pushed out. And nobody was sitting there clamoring to go
higher. Because that dude's so insecure. He opened the press conference with, I've been on the, Patrick brought it up. Yeah. I was on the other side of this. I can coach better than Nathaniel Hackett. Apparently, you can't.
I'll tell you one thing, though. I think that'll rub some veterans the wrong way. He left Russell Wilson in.
That was a bad move. I agree.
That was a bad decision by Sean Payton. I mean, what are you doing? I mean, this is a guy who's won a Super Bowl, been to another one. I mean, I just don't get that decision.
Yeah, that could turn quickly into a toxic situation because you have one dude that, as you just mentioned, Dustin, maybe a little insecure, kind of over the top with the machismo and the ego, that being Peyton. And then you have another dude that's legitimately a plastic human. Like, you don't even, like, what is this? It almost feels like, hello, am I talking to a real human being? Those super talented on the other side of his, it's not like he's been the issue. I'm not pretending that Russell Wilson's been the issue this year, but if they continue to lose, it does feel like that's kind of a combustible situation with those two.
Well, and like, credit to Russ, no matter how bad things get, he does the fake positivity thing, trying to speak it into existence. Very curious to see as this goes on longer and longer with Sean Payton, if we ever hear some frustration out of Russ, because if we ever do, we know it's real. Because he's so good at putting on a face to kind of cover up and just, everything's fine, guys. Everything's fine, even though we all see it's not.
Real quick, where are you guys on Russell Wilson? I mean, he's
there's
at the end,
left.
Right?
There's nothing left.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree. You'll never hear, that's just his thing. He'll never say something. He'll say something maybe passive, and you can read into some negativity, but he'll never overtly say anything.
Like the end of the tube of toothpaste where you're pushing it out, and every now and then you have a different angle, you squeeze it and you go, oh, there's a little bit more left in this in this container than I thought, but you're like, no, it's mostly empty. And then like every now and then you're like, oh, I only got a little this time, but then you twist it another way another time and a little bit more comes out. That he, there will be moments and glimpses of the old Russ, but it's not there.
But you know what, we saw this weekend two examples of two teams getting destroyed and two coaches who handle press conferences completely differently. Deion Sanders, I don't know if you guys saw any of the audio from his press conference. I thought he handled it very, very well. He said, we got our butt kicked. They dominated us in every facet of the game, and we got to get better. There's things, blah, blah, blah. And you look at Sean Payton, first thing he comes out and says, I've been in the other side of it. Come on, bro. You just gave up a 70 spot. We've never seen that unless it's college football.
It's the Big 12.
Exactly.
Who was he? Who was the coach that recently used that line, but more effectively? Oh, it was Mike Tomlin. When Mike Tomlin undressed the reporter or dressed down the reporter for essentially not asking a question, making a declarative statement, and Tomlin said, do you have a question? That's what Peyton was trying to do, but it was just out of bitterness.
You're right. That was a straight ripoff. Like, he totally just copied his move, but he did it with, like, such vitriol and anger towards the guy.
I know we're talking Bengals coming up next, but I got to tell you, I want to know, what did Deion Sanders do to Dan Lanning? Did he forget this is one of the 10 greatest players in the history of the NFL, played Major League Baseball? Man, that was personal with him against Colorado, particularly Deion.
We're doing this for wins, not clicks. Yeah. One of the quotes from Mr. Lanning. When we return, Joe Burrow and the Bengals hosting the Rams. Mike Petralia joins us. He's on the Bengals beat.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, worlds are colliding here at VSiN, and up for grabs, a $1,000 voucher at Circa Sportsbook to be used on a Super Bowl futures ticket, and we've got a subscription contest going on. You can help us out. We're going to help you out. If you use the code SHARP right now to sign up for a VSiN annual subscription, you're going to get 40% off the regular price. It's a great deal. Use the code SHARP, get 40% off right now. It's vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. So, you've got a doubleheader tonight. Of course, the Eagles at the Bucks, and then you've got the Rams at the Bengals. To discuss that, we bring in here on Sharp Money, Mike Petralia, Jungle Roar podcast host, does a great job with CLNS, the media Bengals beat. At Trags, T-R-A-G-S on Twitter. We say hi to Mike, and Mike, we'll start here. The number, the Bengals lane 3, the total is 45, but we have to start with the quarterback. What's your take on whether or not Joe Burrow gives it a go tonight?
Right now I would say yes, he's going to give it a go. He had a workout this morning for the team, rested midday, and he's going to have another workout before the game as part of the more routine pregame regimen, and if he passes that and he feels somewhat like he did to start the second half against Baltimore, which is to say very agile, very nimble, very strong, that he will start tonight for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Mike, how serious is the injury in the sense that he could potentially re-aggravate it or cause long-term damage towards this season for his own health?
Well, I would say that there is, you know, the chance that he could re-injure it. certainly they've acknowledged that. Joe Burrow himself has acknowledged that. But that, at this point, is something they have admitted that they're going to have to manage the rest of the season. You know, hopefully they aggressively treat it in between the games, and he's a quick healer, and it somehow, you know, miraculously heals on its own. But that's going to be hard to do, and I think they understand that dynamic, that, you know, something like this really doesn't get better until you have a full off season to not do anything in terms of testing the explosiveness and the, you know, the plyometrics associated with playing that position and dancing around in the pocket.
Mike Petralia joining us on the Bengals beat. Of course, the Bengals host the Rams Monday Night Football tonight. Let's talk about the season thus far. 0-2 start. They've started slowly under, obviously, the head coach. But the Browns beat them 24-3, kind of a listless performance there. And then 27-24 loss to the Ravens. Can you kind of encapsulate the season thus far for the Bengals?
Pretty sluggish, pretty flat, which is surprising given this was a Super Bowl or bust season coming in, and that's all anyone associated with the organization talked about in the offseason, and for good reason. I mean, I think this team, you know, invested in some of the players it did, like, you know, Logan Wilson, like a Jermaine Pratt, and obviously they worked all summer long to get the Joe Burrow extension done. They got that done. And the understanding was, you know, there are a couple players on this roster who may not be here next year. Someone like a T. Higgins, DJ Reader. There are others. Chido Awuzie, their number one cornerback, could not be here. So everything was Super Bowl or bust. And then they come out and don't and get beat up in the trenches against the Cleveland Browns. That's really why they lost that game. They could not make any ground, you know, with their run game. And certainly Joe Burrow looked like he hadn't played in 8 months, which was the case coming off the calf injury. And then last week against Baltimore, they turned the ball over in the red zone. Joe Burrow committed that turnover late in the first half. That was a killer because that really changed the momentum of the game and really gave Baltimore some ability to let Lamar Jackson dictate the tempo, which is what the Ravens have been able to do over the years against the Bengals.
Mike, when you look at this team, it seems like they're traditional slow starters under Zach Taylor. Is there anything that you could point to that really helps this team kind of ramp up as the season progresses and there's confidence that's going to happen this year?
Yeah, Joe Burrow plays better. I mean, look, Joe Burrow is an elite quarterback,
yeah.
And I don't think anybody who's ever watched him doesn't doubt that fact. I mean, he is elite. He's going to come around. This offense is going to come around. I think the big disappointment in the first 2 weeks, no question, has been the defense. They have given up an average of 190 yards, 190, on the ground to the Browns and Ravens. Now, you know, you're talking about a team that had Nick Chubb and the Cleveland Browns, and he was healthy. And then last week was Lamar Jackson. But what really, I think, bothered the Bengals last week is they couldn't get a handle on Justice Hill, you know, and they couldn't really get a handle on Gus Edwards. Those are two guys that should not be gashing you and should not be getting to the edge of the defensive line as easily as the Ravens were able to last week. That's got to change. The Bengals defense in the trenches has got to be better against the run. The Rams don't run the ball very well or very much, so you would figure that plays in the Bengals' favor tonight. And I think, you know, it goes without saying, Trey Hendrickson, Joseph Asai, who returns tonight from a right ankle sprain in the preseason, and Sam Hubbard, they have to get after Matthew Stafford tonight and put some pressure on a quarterback who loves to sling the ball around the field.
Patrick, to
Mike, what?
I'm just going to add real quick, Puka Nacua questionable in this one for the Rams at wide receiver.
Yep, and he's been awesome,
yeah,
the rookie thus far. Go ahead, Mike.
And I think he's going to play from everything that I've been told before the game that I would expect him to be on the field. And, you know, he's somebody that is like a Cooper Kupp, and the Bengals saw what Cooper Kupp could do in Super Bowl 56. And, you know, one thing Zach Taylor told me this week, was that Sean McVay has not really changed his offensive scheme and how they like to spread the ball. They're very well-conceived offense. And, you know, with Matthew Stafford back there, somebody who is intimately familiar with the way Sean McVay wants to pass the ball around the field, I would expect, the rookie to get a lot of targets. I don't know if he'll get 20 targets
like he did against the 49ers, but he's going to get targeted quite a bit tonight against the Bengals.
Mike, with so much of the focus on Burrow in the offense, I'm glad you brought up the defense. It's kind of been unheralded over this nice little run for the Bengals. You point to the deficiencies against the run. What has been the word out of Bengals camp as far as picking up the defense and correcting some of these mistakes?
Well, not letting running backs get in space. The big problem for the Bengals has been misfitting gaps. Their linebackers have been uncharacteristically missing fits in their run defense. Logan Wilson, who's usually exceptionally good at that, has missed a couple of key ones that will allow a couple of big runs. And Jermaine Pratt has missed a couple. And, you know, in a case like last week, Gus Edwards got to the edge, and rookie safety Jordan Battle got wrapped up in a block and left Edwards all alone on the edge, and he was able to run out for 15 yards. And those are the kind of mistakes that can't happen, and that's kind of what happens when you have a rookie out there on the field. Because and why was Jordan Battle out there? Nick Scott, the former Ram, was in concussion protocol, but Nick Scott, is expected to be out of protocol tonight and be able to play against his former team.
Mike, last week I advocated for the Bengals as a pretty good bet at about 4-1 to 5-1 to win the division. Ravens have a bad loss to the Colts yesterday. Browns are sitting at 2-1. Obviously, they lose Nick Chubb. And then, of course, the Steelers are 2-1. Tell me how you kind of see the rest of this division playing out, with the Bengals having 15 games and the other teams having 14 remaining.
Tonight have a chance to get healthy quick, because they have the Tennessee Titans on the road next week. Then they have Arizona, which I'm fully aware they beat Dallas pretty handily yesterday. I watched a lot of that game. And then they have Seattle at home. That is a very winnable game. The Bengals have the chance to get healthy quick. They got to start with one game, and that's tonight. I think they do. I think the Bengals will be able to turn things around, because I have always been someone who believes in the roster. When the roster is as good as the Bengals roster is, I believe, I think the Bengals will eventually find their level ground and level one, or whatever, you know, metaphor you want to use. And I think the Bengals will get things going in the right direction starting tonight.
That's exactly what we needed. Bit of a prediction there. You heard Mike Petralia say he feels the Bengals correct it tonight and beat the Rams. Jungle Roar podcast, of course, he's the host. The media Bengals beat as well, at Trags, T-R-A-G-S on Twitter. Thank you, Mike. Needed the information, and we got it. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Anytime, guys. Have a good one.
You too. Thank you.
Okay, so I didn't even have to ask at the end. He kind of volunteered exactly what he thought. And we've said this ad nauseum on the show, but if you're looking for those that cover the teams to be intimately knowledgeable as far as what a team's going through, go to the beat. And he feels like the Bengals are going to bounce back. We just got a text from Steve. Did you want to comment? He wants to talk about the volatility tonight with Burrow. Fezzik's going to be joining us, big guy, in just a bit. Professional handicapper wants to talk about the volatility tonight with Bengals and Burrow.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the stuff we're all speculating and talking about, Steve will probably bring some practicality to the conversation. I think he probably has a way to bet this game that we're probably all overthinking, as I have a Rams plus +3 ticket in pocket.
So you're hoping to go one way. When we return, some coaching decisions over the weekend that were suspect. We'll get to those and hear from Josh McDaniels as well.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, we're back with another week of football. DraftKings Sportsbook is keeping us in on the NFL action. Of course, new bettors can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. You throw $5 down on any of this week's epic matchups and you walk away an instant winner. Football's more fun when you're in on the action, so download the DraftKings app now and sign up with the code SHARP. New customers can bet just $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, with the code SHARP. The crown is yours.
It's time for some self-reflection.
I'm smart enough, and doggone it,
People like me.
Looking back at the right.
60% of the time, it works every time.
The wrong.
Jeez, I'm an idiot.
And everything in between.
Your voice in my head.
Your voice in mine.
Why can't I get rid of you?
Staring at his reflection, taking a look at the man in the mirror, here is Amal Shah.
All right, there it is. Tremendous intro there as we welcome you back. Amal Shah, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. I thought this would be a perfect time to work in Amal's man in the mirror because he's got 3 points he wants to make. Your survivor lessons from the weekend, likability is as important as ability, but coaches are dumb. So why don't we let you start there with coaches are dumb as your second point, and then we'll discuss some of the coaching decisions over the weekend.
Let's start on Sunday with Robert Saleh just continuing to go with Zach Wilson. He said he gives us the best chance to win. My God, he must not be trying to win. I can't believe Tim Boyle is a worse quarterback than Zach Wilson under any circumstance. Maybe somebody somewhere has seen more out of Zach Wilson in practice than we have and is better than Tim Boyle, but that remains a mystery to me. But I want to really get to two coaches I have some issues with this weekend. One is in the National Football League, Josh McDaniels. We briefly touched upon it on the show, and we talked about this off-air as well. Josh McDaniels had 3 different scenarios in the fourth quarter to make different decisions, and I thought he kind of fumbled them every time. The Raiders are down 16 points with about 11, 12 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. It's 4th-and-5. They've got a monster kicker in Daniel Carlson. They decide to forego the field goal attempt, cut the lead to 13. Patrick, the reason why I was advocating the field goal at that point in time is you alleviate the pressure of having to make both 2-point conversions. Because if you miss one of them, you're still going to need another possession. Put it into a scenario where a 2-touchdown score gives you the win or the lead in that scenario. Doesn't do that. Then late in the game, just outside of the 2-minute warning, about 2 and change, they have all 3 timeouts plus the 2-minute warning coming up. It's 4th-and-5 and about 5 or 6. They decide to go with a field goal. They had a false start, pushed them back to 4th-and-6, kicks the field goal, makes it a 23-18 game at that point in time. Remember, if Pittsburgh gets a first down, the game's going to be virtually over. And he decides to go for the field goal. They wind up with a 4-5-point loss. They get the football back with 12 seconds remaining after the punt was kicked by Harvin for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And as we know, this team did not go 88 yards for the touchdown.
Let's hear from Josh McDaniels defending the move to kick the field goal in the postgame yesterday.
Yeah, going for it. Of course. What was the thought process?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, I thought we, you know, you have 2 choices there. You know, you try to make it a 5-point game where you have an opportunity to win it with a touchdown if you get the ball back, you know, or you try to, you know, go for it there. And then if you happen to convert, then you got to make the 2-point conversion, all the rest of it. So, you know, just as are the decisions you got to make. You know, I thought we did a decent job of putting ourselves in 3rd down there the next series with the defense to try to have a play to get off the field. And we didn't handle that play very well. No. You're going to need another possession anyway. You know what I mean? So it's not a lack of confidence. You know, we went for it multiple times.
Josh, you're down 16.
All right. There's Josh McDaniels. You know, the crazy part about that was he got a reprieve when the 48-yarder that he kicked that he shouldn't have kicked was negated by a Steelers phantom call on the field goal attempt. So they got another opportunity with the ball in the red zone. And then 4th-and-4, 8-yard line of the Steelers, they kicked the field goal to cut it to 5. Like, none of it. And even analytically, like, we can talk about the Brandon Staley decision to go for it at his own territory. But analytically, you know, some would argue what Staley did was correct. Analytically, if you look at what McDaniels did, boys, incorrect, whichever angle you want to dissect it.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I still think it was a bad decision overall, and then I thought he made another bad decision. When the Steelers got the ball back after the field goal, they were facing a 3rd-and-2 at their own 33-yard line, and the Raiders took a timeout after the 2nd-and-5 play in which Najee Harris got 3 yards. So it set up a 3rd-and-2, 2:12 remaining. Patrick, they should not have taken the timeout there. And it was so important not to, because what it would have done was it would have forced a 3rd-and-2 on the other side of the 2-minute warning. You would have only lost 12 seconds of actual game clock. But what it would have done is forced Pittsburgh to run the ball. I don't think the Steelers would have thrown the football in that situation, because that would have put them in a scenario where if it's incomplete, you give the Raiders an extra timeout in their pocket. They would have run the ball, and you would have had a better chance of stopping them. Instead, the Steelers complete the pass. Easy completion there. and they win the football game. And so, to me, that was a huge mistake by Josh McDaniels. One final coaching note on Saturday night, and I know a lot of people were involved in this game, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Buckeyes laying 3, pretty much university. There might have been some 3.5, so you were eliminated in that scenario. But if you were laying 3, when the Buckeyes scored a touchdown, they put 1 second back on the clock. I thought it was an absolutely egregious decision by Ryan Day to kick the extra point. And I'm saying this as a guy who had the Buckeyes minus 3. To me, he should have taken a knee. There's a greater chance of a blocked punt, extra point return for 2 points than the Buckeyes kicking the ball out of bounds on the kickoff and Notre Dame going 65 yards for a touchdown to win the game. You are never getting beat by a field goal in that scenario. There's just not enough time for a field goal to occur. Brent Musburger, I was on with him yesterday, he said, well, what happens if there's a penalty? Here's the thing. You're probably throwing a Hail Mary or it's going to be a lateral play. Highly unlikely that you're going to wind up with a penalty in that scenario. If you do a face mask, do we really believe that Notre Dame would have matriculated the ball down the field 40 yards and then they kick a field goal to be able to win the game?
I thought the Ryan Day post-game interview exposed him as an emotional maniac. Like, what is that? Is a person unfit for the job emotionally?
Lou Holtz?
Look, I don't even care. He was going after, obviously, Lou Holtz, who's 86 years old. Yeah. That's one thing. But the idea that he just absolutely lost his composure and came across emotionally, maniacally, was weird.
I think the guy's from New Hampshire. I don't think he realized when he took this job and makes $9.5 million a year that the type of pressure that comes with being the head coach at Ohio State. I mean, you have more pressure than the governor in the state of Ohio, because at least as the governor, 50% of the people hate you. But when you are the head coach at Ohio State, whether you're in Toledo, Cleveland, Athens, Ohio, Cincinnati, the entire state's focal point is the Buckeyes. And I got to tell you, it seemed like a guy that emotionally exploded after that game, after getting the win. And I'm going to tell you, Lou Holtz is not wrong. This team, their execution on 4th-and-1 is generally terrible. They couldn't punch it at the 1-yard line. They run a Mecca Egbuka on a jet sweep, a terrible play call. You got Chip Traynham and Travion Henderson. Get up there and man up and run the ball. If you can't get a yard in football, then you probably don't deserve to win the football game.
Yeah, Ryan Day sounds like another loss to Michigan away from having some Urban Meyer-sized headaches.
And Marcus Freeman, whose team played well, he's got a good look about him, but how can Notre Dame have 10 guys on the field the last two plays? That is completely unforgivable.
You're absolutely right about that. And the way he handled the press conference, I thought, you know, look, at least they said eventually that we should have jumped off sides and given him half the distance to the goal and run the situation like that. But you're absolutely right. Terrible, terrible decision by Notre Dame there.
Okay. Man in the mirror, Amal Shaw. How about some survivor lessons from the weekend?
You know, you guys, Samet, yourself, and Dustin, and myself, we were on, all of us were on Jacksonville. And the one thing that I generally try to do is avoid teams playing a division opponent. The familiarity always causes these types of upsets. And we all talked about Seattle. And the concern for us was that Andy Dalton was going to play instead of Bryce Young. And I'll tell you, we weren't wrong on Andy Dalton. The Red Rifle had a fantastic football game against that Seattle team. But at the end of the day, having to go to Seattle with this team, I thought the Carolina defense would play better than they did. They did end up giving up 37 points, which is horrific in this scenario. But Dalton was 34 for 58, 361 and 2 touchdowns. Not a bad performance at all. Gave his team an opportunity to win the game. And if you told me before it started that the Panthers are scoring 27 points, I would have said the Seahawks are set with a loss. So, I mean, I'll live with the result. I still thought Jacksonville had a great opportunity, needed the game after the poor performance against Kansas City, but they did not play well at home, and that was a bad loss for them against a Houston Texans team who looks like they might be on the rise.
Okay, and finally, man in the mirror, likability, as important as ability.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to someone at Showtime, and they were talking about sometimes when people are likable, they get jobs and certain opportunities that they probably don't deserve just because people get along well with them. And you see it sometimes in coaching. And I said this about Alex Grinch the other night when it was USC Arizona State. Him and Lincoln Riley are about the same age. Lincoln Riley's 40 years old. Alex Grinch is 43 years old. The problem for USC continues to be their defense. They made that Arizona State team with Drew Pine look like they had a competent offense, and they kept them in that football game. USC wins 42-28. If the Trojans don't figure something out quick, they better make a change at the end of the season from Alex Grinch to a new defensive coordinator.
Okay, great stuff, Amal. Man in the mirror on a Monday when we return. Professional handicapper, two-time Super Contest winner Steve Fezzik joins us, and he's fired up. Sharp money on a Monday.